Have you ever watched a pelican work a shoreline? It drops off a dune, sets its wings, and then just hangs there a few feet over the water, barely moving a feather, riding something you can't see. That something is real. It's a cushion of air trapped between the wing and the surface, and it is one of the oldest free rides in aerodynamics. Now imagine building a passenger vehicle around that exact trick, electric carrying a dozen people between coastal cities. Not quite a boat, not quite an airplane, living in the strange space in between. I'm Vector, and this is Clear Direct on Radio Hangar. Today we are going to talk about the Sea Glider, and specifically the machine a company in Rhode Island called Regent is actually building and actually flying. Let's break this down. Before we get into it, this segment is supported by AviationSoul.com. They make aviation challenge coins that mark the real milestones. First solo, private pilot, instrument rated, CFI, the whole journey. Beautifully made and built to last. AviationSoul.com, okay? Wing and ground effect. Let's start with the physics, because the physics is the whole story here. Every one of us has felt ground effect. It's that moment in the flare when the airplane suddenly doesn't want to quit flying. You pull the power, you hold it off, and the airplane floats down the runway like it's on a pillow. That pillow is real. Here's what's happening. When your wing gets down close to the surface, roughly within one wingspan of it, two things change. First, the surface interferes with the wingtip vortices, the little tornadoes that spin off the ends of your wings. Those vortices are the fingerprint of induced drag, the drag you pay just to make lift. Get close to the ground and they can't fully form, induced drag drops. Second, air piles up underneath the wing and can't spill away as easily. You get a ram cushion, a region of higher pressure trapped between the wing and the surface. Put those together and the wing gets dramatically more efficient. Your lift-to-drag ratio, the number that tells you how many pounds of lift you get for every pound of drag, can jump by a big margin close to the surface. For a normal airplane, that's a nuisance on landing. For a vehicle designed to live down there on purpose, it's the entire point. The data tells an interesting story. A wing operating deep in ground effect can see its efficiency improve on the order of 30% to 40% compared to the same wing up in free air. That efficiency is exactly what you need when your energy is coming from a battery, because batteries are heavy and they hold a fraction of the energy that jet fuel does. So that's the bet. If your fuel is bad, make your wing brilliant. Fly so low that the surface itself hands you back the efficiency your battery can't provide. This idea is not new. Not even close. The Soviets built enormous ground effect vehicles in the 1960s and 70s. The most famous was a monster on the Caspian Sea that Western intelligence nicknamed the Caspian Sea Monster. It weighed hundreds of tons, had 10 jet engines up front, and skimmed the water at hundreds of miles an hour. Then there was the Loon, a later machine that carried missiles. These things were real, they flew, and they were terrifying. And here's what most people miss. They never went anywhere as a category, not because the physics failed. The physics worked fine, they failed on the boring stuff. They were brutally hard to control. They wanted to fly at exactly one height, in exactly the right conditions, and any real wave or any pilot mistake could put a wingtip in the water at speed, which ends very badly. They couldn't climb over an obstacle. They were maritime vehicles that behaved like twitchy airplanes, and nobody could quite figure out what they were for. So why are we talking about it now in 2026? Two things changed, electric propulsion and modern flight control computers. Hold that thought. Let's talk about what Regent is actually building, because they've been careful and specific, and I respect that. Their vehicle is called the Viceroy. It's a sea glider size to carry 12 passengers plus 2 crew. Their pitch is regional coastal routes. Think city center waterfront to city center waterfront. Distances in the range of 180 miles on today's batteries, at cruise speeds around 180 miles an hour. That's meaningfully faster than a ferry, and it skips the airport entirely. The clever part is that the Viceroy doesn't have just one mode. It has three, and it transitions through them in sequence. Mode 1, it floats at the dock, and in the harbor, it sits on its hull like an ordinary boat, moving slowly, behaving itself around other vessels. Mode 2, it foils. As it speeds up, it rises onto hydrofoils, little underwater wings on struts, and lifts the hull clear of the water. If you've seen the foiling boats in the America's Cup, that's the idea. Foiling gets the draggy hull out of the water so it can accelerate cleanly, and it gives a smoother ride through harbor chop. Mode 3, it flies. Once it's fast enough, it lifts off the foils entirely and settles into wing and ground effect, cruising roughly a wingspan or so above the surface on its main wing, propelled by an array of electric motors. That three-stage sequence is the real engineering insight. The hydrofoil isn't a gimmick. It solves the single hardest problem the old Soviet monsters had, which was the violent, draggy transition from displacement boat to flying machine. Foils give you a clean, controllable runway on the water. You climb onto the foils, then you climb off them into the air. It's an elegant answer to a 60-year-old problem. Now the honest part. The pros and cons, because I promised you balanced and I mean it. Start with the promise. Because it never leaves ground effect. The Viceroy is enormously efficient for an electric machine, and that efficiency is what makes the battery range actually useful instead of a science fair number. It uses no runway and no airport. It takes off and lands on water, which means a coastal city with a waterfront already has infrastructure. It's electric, so it's quiet, and it has zero direct emissions in operation. And flying that low, over water, in a vehicle that can simply settle onto the surface if something goes wrong, is a genuinely different safety picture than an airplane at altitude. If you lose power, you're already a boat, and you're already at sea level. Now the problems. And there are real ones. Waves. This is the big one. A vehicle cruising a few meters over the water is fundamentally limited by sea state. Regent has talked about operating in wave heights up to a few feet, but the ocean does not care about your brochure. Bigger seas mean you either slow down, change modes, or don't go. This is a fair-weather coastline machine, not an all-conditions airplane, that constrains the routes and the reliability of the schedule traffic and obstacles. You're operating in a busy maritime corridor at 180 miles an hour, a few meters off the deck, sharing the water with ferries, fishing boats, kayakers, and swimmers. Sense and avoid at that speed and that altitude is not trivial. The flight control system and the detection system have to be very, very good. Range and payload. It's still a battery. 180 miles is a real number, but it's a coastal hop number, not a cross-gulf number. And every pound of battery is a pound you're not selling as a ticket. That economic math is the same wall every electric aviation startup is hitting. And then the interesting one, regulation. Who governs this thing? Here's where it gets genuinely fascinating from a systems point of view. The Viceroy is legally a boat. In the United States, it falls under the Coast Guard as a maritime vessel, not under the Federal Aviation Administration as an aircraft. And there's international precedent for that. The International Maritime Organization has actually written guidelines for wing and ground craft, classifying them as ships that happen to fly close to the surface. That's a double-edged sword. On one hand, maritime certification for a novel vessel is arguably a faster, more flexible path than dragging a brand new aircraft type through full FAA-type certification, which we've watched grind eVTOL companies down for years. On the other hand, the Coast Guard has never certified a passenger vessel that flies at 180 miles an hour a few meters off the water. Everybody is writing this rulebook together, in real time. And regulators writing a brand new rulebook is exactly where optimistic timelines go to die. Speaking of timelines, let's be honest about where this actually is. Regent has moved faster and quieter than a lot of the hype-heavy players in this space, and I give them credit for that. They built and tested a smaller quarter-scale prototype first. Then they moved to a full-scale Viceroy prototype and have been running it through on-water trials, floating and foiling and working toward the full flying regime with crew aboard. They've announced a manufacturing facility in Rhode Island. They've signed letters of intent and provisional orders from ferry operators and, notably, from some defense customers because a fast, quiet, low-flying electric vessel that lands on water is interesting to the Marine Corps for exactly the reasons you'd guess. But letters of intent are not revenue, and a prototype on the water is not a certified vessel carrying paying passengers. The company is targeting commercial passenger service in the second half of this decade. My read, and this is the same read I'd give you on any of these ventures, is that you should treat the aggressive dates as best case and expect the first real routes to be short, coastal, fair weather, and carefully chosen. That is not a knock. That is how a genuinely new category is supposed to start. Small, boring, and safe. So who else is in this? Regent is the most prominent name in the modern sea glider push, and it was founded by a couple of engineers who came out of the electric aviation world. There's other work happening internationally on wing and ground craft, some of it defense-flavored, some of it in Asia, but Regent is the one that has combined the electric powertrain, the hydrofoil transition, and a serious certification strategy into one coherent package. That combination is why they're the one worth watching. Let me leave you with the way I think about this machine as an engineer. The Sea Glider is not trying to beat the airplane. That's the thing to understand. An airplane at altitude will always be faster and go farther, and it always could. The Sea Glider is aimed at a completely different target. It's aimed at the ferry and at the short coastal hop, and at the trip you make today by driving 3 hours around a bay you could cross in 20 minutes. It's trying to be a better boat, one that happens to borrow a trick from the birds. And whether it succeeds or not, the physics underneath it is honest. That pelican really is getting a free ride. The question was never whether ground effect works. The question was whether anyone could finally tame it. Electric motors and modern flight computers just might be the tools that do. The reporting on Regent's testing progress and specifications comes from the company's own disclosures and from the trade coverage in outlets like Aveweb and Aviation Week, and the classification framework comes from the International Maritime Organization's guidance on wing and ground craft. You can find more of what we cover over at radiohangar.com. Next time you're floating down final and the airplane settles onto that cushion and just won't land, remember somebody built a whole vehicle around that feeling. This is Vector. Keep asking how it works.